From your world news headquarters on the World Wide Web, it's time for your daily dose of sanity. This is the Maria Heller Show. Maria Heller is a published author, founder of the Universal Wheel, a lifestyle and philosophy based on our interconnectedness to all living things, a Reiki master, and delivers the news with spiritual views. How many intuitive news decoders, animal rights activists, and vegetarian broadcasters are there? Just one. Maria. Maria has provided independent news for a smart audience for over 13 years now on the Maria Heller Show, available at maria.net.
M-E-R-I-A.net.
And now, here is your host, the mouth that roars, Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. I want to thank everybody for your well wishes on my recent bout with, I'm sure, chemtrail poisoning. Anyway, welcome to today's show, Conversations with David. I know a lot of you have been waiting a while for David Icke to come on the show, and I'm so happy to have him with me this morning. Good morning, David.
Hello, Maria.
How are you doing?
I'm all right, yeah. I've attached to this chair for months. In this little office, writing a new book, and along with everything else, you know, it's I see the light of day when I go to the store to get some food in.
Right.
But it's very, very productive, and I'm very pleased with the way it's going.
That's great. So everybody can be looking forward to yet another book by David Icke. So, you know, sit tight. We'll let you know when the book is ready. That's for sure. I'm looking forward to it myself.
Well, I think this is the one, Maria, for me. What keeps coming in my mind as I'm writing it, it's probably going to be the biggest book I've ever written. Mm. And when you look at Human Race Get Off Your Knees, you can see how big it will be then. And it's also the easiest book I've ever written. And what keeps coming in my mind is you know, my life's been leading to this book all along. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot to come after it, but it's been leading to this particular book because of what's in it and the way it's put together. So
right.
I'm working, you know, I get up sometimes 4 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, and start on it. Do other things for the website as well. And I'm still here often at 9:10 at night. So that's how keen I am to,
right,
to get it in circulation as quick as possible.
Absolutely. Well, you know, before we went on air, I was telling you that for the past few days, you know, because of my bronchitis, which I'm sure is chemtrail poisoning, it was very difficult for me to just lie around doing nothing. You know, it was stressful actually for me because there's so much to do. And I think you explained it the best when you said, you know, what else is there to do?
Well, I think that's the point. Certainly from my perspective, is if anyone's, you know, in any way grasped the situation that we're facing, then what else is there to do?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, people say to me, because I'm working all these hours every day, and my sporting son is just going to live with his brother in another place on mainland England, and therefore the only two reasons I go out, which are to wash and play cricket and football, they're now taken away from me. So I'll fill that with work probably. But people say to me, "Oh, you've got anything else in your life?" Well, actually, if you knew what the situation was, you would understand why the answer to that is no, and why I would add, and I don't want anything else. Because, like you say, there's so much work to do here, and there's so much information to gather, to just give people the opportunity to see the scale of what we're facing. You know, if you listen to radio shows or read things on the internet about the conspiracy and the banking conspiracy and the disarming Americans conspiracy, which is as blatant as you can get, and the government conspiracy and all these things, the manipulated wars conspiracy, you're still walking around the outer rim of the rabbit hole. You've not entered it yet.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing as that information is, and vital it is that it gets out there. I do all that stuff myself. It's still tiptoeing around the outer rim of the rabbit hole. That's how deep it goes. And you know, when you cover the range of subjects that I do, I mean, everything from ancient history to the nature of reality to the whole shebang, and it all fits together in a coherent whole. Mm-hmm. If you can see how it fits, well, you know, how am I going to keep up with that without working all hours that I'm awake? It's something you need to be doing. We need to do, and
I know.
In many ways, it's a privilege to do. It's a privilege to have had a life in which this information has come my way. I mean, I could be working in a bank, or what I used to do, I could be reading words in a television camera. Hello, good evening, and welcome. I mean, you know, I definitely would take the pill if I was still doing that by now. But it's a privilege to do it, and it needs to be done to the best of our ability. And it's something that we can't mess around with, because you know, we're looking this stuff in the face now more and more. I mean, it's amazing to me, surreal, when I go on the internet every day and I, you know, just to find out what they're trying to get us to believe, I watch the news once a day on television maybe, and I'm seeing my books from the 1990s being read to me.
Wow.
You know, and I think it's starting to dawn on more and more people that actually this is real, and it's more than real, it's happening.
Right, and it's the importance of people knowing what we know that keeps us going, because it's really the only way we can change things or stop it.
Yes, and it's very deep. It's very deep, and the whole basis of it is psychological, and it's about energy for very deep in the rabbit hole reasons. This conspiracy wants us to produce very low vibrational emotional energy.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to be very, very streetwise to make your way through this minefield, because if you are put in a situation through the actions of the banks that are controlled by these people, they're controlled by the people that are at war with humanity.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they do what they do, and that's why governments that are at war with humanity give all the debt and taxpayer money to the banks, because they're both playing on the same team.
Mm-hmm.
And so this manipulation puts you in a situation like in Greece and other places, not least America and Britain, where you are feeling very, very negative emotion, understandably, low vibrational emotion, fear, worry, anxiety, frustration, and all those things at the situation you face. Well, they want that. They want you to feel like that, and they want to feed off that energy. But then if you react to them, understandably, in the circumstances in places like Greece with riots and stuff like that,
right.
Well, they want that as well. and because it's in the background, while people have been watching the Super Bowl and the game show and any rubbish by Simon Cowell, while they've been doing that, while they've been, you know, being focused on the light on the porch, someone's been creeping up behind them with a swatter in their hand, and that takes the form of putting into place a Orwellian police state. Well, it's not a police state; it's a military state. You know, you have in America the Posse Comitatus Act, which limits the military's involvement in domestic law enforcement. Well, they've got around that very easily.
Right.
What they've done is turn the police into the military, but called them the police to get around that.
Right.
And you know, I wrote a newsletter at the weekend detailing the unbelievable scale of military technology, including tanks and armored vehicles, that are being virtually given in financial terms by the Pentagon from the military to even local law enforcement.
Oh,
and
yeah.
As they cut back finance on local law enforcement on purpose, it's forcing them into trying to cope in another way, and at the same time it's being cut back, the Pentagon's saying, well, here's a load of military equipment for next to nothing. Hey, take this. And so it's been constructed while people have been looking the other way and saying it would never happen, to create a situation where when people do understand and do start to react, that structure is in power. I said back in the 1990s, you know, the door is closing, and the question is it going to close before enough people realize what's going on to keep it open? I'm talking about the cell door. Right. And that is still the question, because when you look at a situation now in America where the president can sign a death warrant with no judicial oversight, no congressional oversight, nothing, where he can sign for drone bombings of whoever anybody likes, and now you've got this guy Brennan being pushed for the head of the CIA, who's been running this drone thing, this drone horror, in the Middle and Near East, and all this is going on in a so-called democratic country. You can see how deep it goes, but you can only, and it is blatant now. You know, you used to have to look for it. You don't have to look for it now. It's there, it's in your face, but still, vast, vast numbers of people still can't see it because they're not looking that way. They're looking at the other way. They're looking at what's on the cell phone and all this stuff. It's all about psychology. It's about diverting attention and imposing a programmed perception of reality. This is where the game is being played. You know, there's a few centimeters at the back of the brain which constructs our visual reality. That's the stadium in which it's being played. And something like 80% of the information that the brain receives to construct reality comes through the visual senses. That's why these this conspiracy uses symbolism so much. Why it uses visual images so much? Because it knows that that is a gateway to the mind and a gateway to the to perception. And you know, there are so many people in this conspiracy research arena who are still stuck in the five sense level of this, and it, that's the outer rim. It ain't where the real understanding lies, and it certainly is not where the answers lie to bring this around and turn it around.
Right. Well, you know, I think you pointed that out very clearly in one of your newsletters earlier this month on the State of the Union and all the symbolism that was behind Barack Obama while he spoke. So, you know, I think when people actually see it, like you so well explained it in your newsletter, then they can start to understand. Because when I look at the back of, you know, Obama, you know, I see, you know, the Towers of Babel and so many things that are recognizable through, you know, ancient symbology.
And this has come through from the ancient world, from Babylon, from Sumer, way back, and they brought it through the Roman Church, which they created. They brought it through the secret societies. They brought it through the deeper satanic human sacrifice level of these secret societies that we call Satanism, and it's come right the way through to the modern world. So, see, this is what did I see the other day? There was someone had put an image together, and they were basically saying the difference between what people call good and evil is actually knowledge and ignorance. And without knowledge, you can't see what's happening. And this is why the suppression of knowledge and the suppression of real information is also at the heart of this whole thing. You know, one level they're programming a perception, but on the other level they have to suppress as best they can information that would allow people to see that there were other perceptions of possibility. And so if you don't know that behind Obama, when he's making his State of the Union address, are the two symbols from which the very word fascism came, goes back to the Roman Empire, then it will mean nothing to you. But if you know that, then the next question is, hold on a second, what's the fascist symbol doing behind the president?
Right.
What's, And when you go deeper into it, well, you see that, you know, the whole landscape, political landscape, is awash with ancient symbolism. And again, here we go. Because, you see, this is the point that's so important to make. This is again why people have to start to appreciate at least the basics of the nature of reality and how we construct it. Otherwise, they'll never understand the conspiracy, because those in the deep and the deep and the deep shadows, they understand how reality works. They've just created a mainstream science which is not there to discover and enlighten. It's there to keep the lid on the nature of reality. Most scientists don't know that, because they go through the system and they're as programmed as anyone else, probably more.
Right.
But we are constructing reality through information in the form of waveform, electromagnetic, whatever you want to call it, information, energetic information that we are picking up. Now, according to mainstream science, every second, we are, they call them impressions, we are taking a view, almost like a photograph, 11 million times every second. The brain constructs its sense of reality every second from 40 of those impressions out of 11 million. And of course, you know, these numbers will be estimates, but what is clearly not an estimate on the basis of that is the fantastic amount of information that we do not decode into reality. In fact, we are doing it on so little information compared with what is there that the brain actually has to fill in the bits that aren't there so that we seem to have a seamless reality that we're experiencing. Now, you can access the brain mind with information to construct that reality through the five senses. You can do it through the ears. And as I'm speaking now, I'm resonating a vibrational field which carries the information, resonated by the vocal cords, that carries the information that I am seeking to communicate. It passes from me not in the form of words, but in the form of a vibrational information field or a series of fields. And then the receiver decodes that through the ears from the vibrational to the electrical and sends it to the brain in an electrical form, carrying that information, and then the brain decodes that into what we hear as speech. Now, because I'm speaking and sound is involved, and I'm speaking within the sound range of human perception, what I'm saying enters the brain at a conscious level. The brain hears it, therefore it's aware of its existence. With visual information, when you think of the 40 to the 11 million, vast amounts of visual information, think of the 80% of the information we receive is through the visual senses,
right,
is actually entering through the subconscious level of perception. Thus, if you want a gateway to the subconscious to program a perception and then filter that through to the conscious mind as apparently its own thoughts, decisions, perceptions, etc., then the visual medium, or on sound levels beyond what we can hear, that's the way to do it. So all the time when we look at these symbols, we don't even, you know, the subconscious is a sponge. It takes in everything. The conscious mind picks things out and decides what it's gonna accept it into its perception construct. But when we are looking at something like Obama or someone else in another situation, we may be looking at him and we may be laughing as we hear what he says or cringing. But the subconscious is picking out the whole picture. It's picking out all the symbols. Now, symbols And visual images are nothing more than, as with speech, a vibrational information field. The only difference is it enters on the subconscious level overwhelmingly. Now, you know, when you point out that there's fascist symbols behind Obama, and you explain what they mean and why they're a fascist symbol, then the conscious mind has been made aware of it. Now, we're not being subconsciously manipulated by those symbols anymore because the conscious mind is aware of them, thus the barrier comes up. That's why it's so, so important to get this information across, because it makes, once people become aware of a subconscious manipulation, immediately they are much, much less prone to that manipulation. I mean, classic, if you take a subliminal picture or subliminal advertisement and you show it to people, about 95% won't see it.
Right.
But once you point out to them where the subliminals are, that every time they see that picture again, I've it's happened to me, I've done the experiment with others, it works every time. Mm-hmm. Once that they've been pointed out and brought to the attention of the conscious mind, then every time they look at that picture, the subliminal is the first thing they see, never mind not seeing it at all. So this is what this communication of this information about what's really going on is about, and why it's so vital, because it's making the conscious mind aware of what is overwhelmingly a subconscious manipulation of perception.
Right. Then you say, wow, it was right in my face all along. You know, years ago when you used to recommend that movie, They Live. And so many people have asked me, because I've recommended it to so many people, they said, is that David Icke in that movie? Because the actor tends to look like you. But it's kind of interesting, because I think about that, and now you're at the point, you know, which must be kind of difficult, maybe even amusing, where you're walking around without the glasses and you can see it all.
What the glasses in They Live represent is the subconscious mind. It's what is there to be seen, and it's like what the glasses do is say to the conscious mind, look, this is what's all around you. And in the end, you don't need symbolically the glasses, because your own conscious mind becomes so aware through the repetition of new understanding year after year after year, becomes so aware that it's seeing what other people do not see, because it's almost become trained to look for it because of its awareness of what is going on and how it's being done.
I
can watch an Obama speech, and it's like I'm hearing something else completely different to what people are hearing who do not know what he's all about.
Exactly. I'm like filling in the sentences as he's saying them. You know, it's like reading between the lines. Even when you look at the news, it's more, what are they not saying? But, you know, I don't mean to shift the subject, but I know I have some questions for you that are really super.
Okay.
And I know some of my listeners have been waiting to see your opinion on it, too. What do you think about the Pope's resignation?
Well, absolutely centrally involved. There will be many, many other things involved too. But centrally involved will be child abuse. Because Ratzinger and his great mate, Pope John Paul II, mm-hmm. were involved in a massive cover-up of child abuse by Roman Catholic priests all over the world. It was the Pope John Paul II that appointed Ratzinger to head an organization. I think he did it in about 1981, which has another name now, but its previous name, in effect, was the Grand Inquisition. You know, the Inquisition that tortured and murdered and slaughtered people for not believing in the Roman Church view of everything? Well, that was orchestrated out of the Vatican by an organization which was given a makeover, if you like, and a new name. But it was the same organization. Mm-hmm. And in I think it was 1981, Ratzinger was made head of that. And then in 2001, it was decreed by Pope John Paul II. And when you really look at it, I mean, Ratzinger was his minder. I mean, what Ratzinger wanted, the Pope said okay, basically. Anyway, it's a bit like Obama, you know, sign here, will you? And George Bush, sign here, will you? Well, I can't write my name. Well, look, just try. And anyway, so he made him, put Ratzinger in a situation where every single accusation of child abuse worldwide by a Roman Catholic official, priest, whatever, had to be reported and dealt with by Ratzinger through this organization in the Vatican. And he was chief cover-upper of the whole thing. And there was, I think it was an HBO documentary just a few weeks ago now, quite very recently, about, in fact, it was at the time, it was coming, it came out about 2 days or so after the Pope announced his resignation. And I'd seen it online before the resignation. So when the resignation came, you know, it all kind of was very synchronistic. Right. And the documentary exposed widespread child abuse by the Roman Church in America and connected the dots right through to the Vatican and Ratzinger for covering it all up. Mm-hmm. And then when you look at the financial corruption in the Vatican, which came to light in the 1970s, early 80s, when the Vatican Bank was involved in the big Freemason scandal, the propaganda Jew-A, the P2 scandal, involving a fascist called Licio Gelli, a Mussolini fascist and a friend of Juan Perón in Argentina, who was the head of P2, and all that happened then, and there were the very recently there have been people involved in the Vatican Bank who've stepped away and said it's all corrupt, and the Vatican has been accused of money laundering by the European Union and what have you. So there's so many scandals that are just spinning around in the vortex we call the Vatican, but clearly we are looking at something absolutely major, because for a pope to step down for the first time in 600 years, it must be very, very important what's going on. Because, of course, for the kind of mythos of the Pope being chosen by God, actually he's chosen by a bunch of priests, but or bishops, but to the idea that he's chosen by God, what if he's chosen by God, he can't resign, can you?
Right.
But apparently Ratzinger now says God has told him he should resign, you know.
Right.
I mean, you know, and spend the rest of his life in prayer. Well, I understand he's announced he's going to continue to live at the Vatican. Well, that's interesting, because the Vatican is a state within a state, and he can't be arrested unless he comes outside the state. So,
right, so that gives
it's you know, there have been many prophecies over the years about the end of the Roman Church, and I can now see it in sight,
right.
Not tomorrow, but it's being mortally wounded here by the day. And the same is true, and certainly going to be true even more, of the British royal family. You know, we're entering a time of enormous upheaval, enormous change, and enormous revelation. And we're going to see great institutions of power, like the royal family and the Roman Church, we're going to see them come down. There's going to be a period of enormous chaos as the old collapses, and it's, you know, the Chinese have a saying, you know, may you live in interesting times. Well, they don't have to wish for it, because we're in it.
Absolutely. Well, that was another question. You know, a lot of people, a lot of our listeners have been following the Jimmy Savile story, and they also said, you know, ask David how far up in the royal family does this go?
Oh, it goes right up to the top. I mean, you know, Jimmy Savile said publicly and boasted that he was first introduced to the royal family, the inner sanctum of the royal family, by a guy called Lord Mountbatten, who was a known paedophile. And he introduced Savile to Prince Philip and Prince Charles, both of whom were mentored by Lord Mountbatten. You've got a situation where Savile was a disc jockey and a presenter of tacky television programs. And yet he was so closely ensconced within the inner sanctum of the royal family. And, you know, this came out through Princess Diana, that Savile was asked to act as a go-between and a mediator between Prince Charles and Princess Diana when their marriage was breaking down. What's going on? And in 1997-98, I was asked to go and speak or say a few words at some little meeting at the House of Lords in London. Why, I don't know. It was out of nowhere. And there were one or two people there, one or two members of the House of Lords. And there was a woman who said some very interesting things about Princess Diana and the death of Princess Diana, which, of course, at that time was very, very topical and still very much in people's minds because it hadn't long happened. And I said to her afterwards, you know, how do you know that? And she said, well, you know, my best friend was Diana's best friend for 9 years. They fell out about 2 years before Diana died. And she said, I think she'll talk to you. So anyway, long story short, as they say, she ended up talking to me. I did recorded two long interviews with her. And she was an alternative healer in London who Diana went to. And I was given chapter and verse about so much, and it's all proved, all of it has proved to be true, about the Diana relationship with the royal family, what they were doing to her, the fact that MI5, friendly people at MI5, were leaving packages and letters for Diana at the this lady's healing center, which were warning her that her life was in danger because the royals wanted her gone. And so at that time, in those conversations, this lady told me about Jimmy Savile and how vile and sleazy Diana thought him to be, and how he was basically there in the inner circle. And so then you look against that at the fact that throughout the period of the devastatingly destructive premiership of Margaret Thatcher, he was so close, Savile, he was so close to Margaret Thatcher that he spent 11 straight New Year's Eves with her,
right,
and her paedophile husband, Dennis. And then what is unfolding now is that, and I knew this anyway, but it's starting to get closer and closer to the public arena, that the Thatcher government, both in her cabinet and her inner circle, was absolutely infested with paedophiles. And there is a very good chance that in the next few weeks, that one of her former ministers at that time, who I've known about in terms of his paedophilia back into the 90s, he's going to be arrested. And that will open a can of worms, which will be very difficult to shut down. Because what's happening at the moment, you see, Jimmy Savile was a record-breaking paedophile. I mean, they found hundreds of people came forward once the initial television program about just a few went to air, the hundreds of people came forward. It's just stunning, the numbers.
Right.
But what's been, and there was this police investigation called Operation U-Tree and all that stuff, but what's been missed and covered up completely so far is why he was so close to Margaret Thatcher, why he was so close to the royal family. It was because he wasn't only a paedophile, he was a procurer of children for other paedophiles. And he actually said, in talking about his relationship with the royal family at one point, that he was very good at getting things done while working, in his words, deep cover. And you see, when you look at his life, he was a disc jockey in the 60s, and then he became an aging disc jockey, and then a bit of a television presenter, and then he basically went off the radar in terms of you know, earning a living out of the media.
Right.
And yet, this man was a multiple millionaire that went around in a Rolls Royce, and no one seems to ask the question, well, where's his money come from? Because
right.
you can't pay for that, even working as you know, as he did for the BBC in those days.
And look at the access he had. He had access in and out of places that normal
yeah,
people could never
exactly.
get into.
And so where did his money come from? Well, if you are a procurer of children for elite paedophiles and you are trustworthy to keep your mouth shut, then it can be a very lucrative business, and that's where his money came from. And he procured children for a man called Ted Heath, who was the leader of the Conservative Party before Margaret Thatcher, and was the Prime Minister of Britain that signed us into the European Union, very, very close to the Rothschilds. And he used to procure children for him. So this is what it was all about. And there is a can of worms. Well, that's the understatement of the world, really, to come out in this country and in the Vatican, and I have to say in America through people like the Bush family and the paedophile hardcore of the Democrat and Republican parties, that will just put the public in a state of utter shock for some time.
Well, it might just
be understanding of what's been going on.
Well, it might just be what we need to bring down the whole house of cards. David, we're going to take a short break. Stay with us. I want to ask you a little bit about Hollywood's part in promoting all these pedophiles. Stay with us. Maria here. Welcome to the one-stop shop. Yep, it's a one-stop shop, maria.net. You get real news here. You get real environmental news. You get real health news that may save your life one day. You get spiritual news and some real hope. You get political news. You get warned of upcoming false flags, which makes you know when to zig or when to zag. Learn how to stay happy and healthy in a world obviously gone mad. I can't force you to subscribe to my show, but I can only ask you, if you're sitting there listening to this and you're not a subscriber, to stay in integrity. Get over to my website, maria.net, M-E-R-I-A.net, and pick a subscription of your choice. Not only are you supporting my work, but you're supporting truth for everybody on this planet. You can also gift your family, gift your friends with a gift subscription. If you really love people, the best gift you can give them on any holiday is the gift of a real education. Stay out of fear. Remember, learning how to laugh at all of this is part of what I teach you. And now, let's get back to the show. Okay, welcome back to Conversations with David, my co-host David Icke. Get over to davidicke.com. Check out his work. Absolutely. Get his books. Get informed, you know, because once I have to tell you, David, even though this is a whole lot of work, what we do, I can't imagine living a life without what we do in it.
Well, not now, no. Once you start to understand what's going on, there's no going back. I am bewildered. It's It's interesting when you've been doing it as long as I have, and I'm sure you have, it's about 25 years now. You see people come and you see people go, and some people come and have a go at you and attack you, and then they go, and then someone else comes and attacks you, and then they go, and then you go other people who are suddenly flavor of the month for a second, and everyone's kind of focused on them, and then they go. I don't understand the they go bit, because once you are aware of what's going on, there is nowhere to go except as deep into this as you can, to make as many people aware of it as possible, to make the biggest contribution to freedom, right, if you like, well, as you can. I don't understand this they go business.
I've tried to figure that out, and you know what? It's no different than, you know, 30 years ago when I was teaching people, you know, environmental awareness, you know, not just as something as simple as not throwing garbage out of your car while you're driving down the street.
Yeah.
I think that once people get aware of something, they know that they have to do something. And a lot of people choose not to do, still waiting for someone else to do it.
Yeah.
So I think there's a little bit of fear, and sometimes they get a little overwhelmed, but it's also they know there's a call to action here. And they either can't do it, won't do it, or afraid to do it, and they back away. They want someone else to do it for them, which is why they go to the next, you know, guru of the month, or, you know, the most popular speaker, you know, out there, you know, the Pope, you know, whoever, their priest, their rabbi, somebody else do this for me because I don't want to get involved.
See, it's funny because, you know, I have a completely different way of looking at my life, in the sense that,
as do I,
once you started, this is why it's so important that with the five sense information comes an understanding of reality, because, you know, one without the other is an imbalance, and you know, you're going to get caught if you got one without the other, no matter which one it is. Because there's a lot of spiritual people that are in absolute denial that there's conspiracy going on, and so they're being played like a violin. But once you realize that you are infinite awareness having an experience, and the body is your vehicle for experience, your name is the name of your experience, not you, then you can look at life in a completely different way. I'll tell you how I see my life. I see my life as a job.
Right.
I see my life as something I have come to do, awareness, come into this reality, into this frequency range to do something. And then I'm doing it to the best of my ability, and then I'm going home.
Right. So interesting you said that, David, because the other night when I couldn't sleep, I started journaling, and that's basically exactly what I wrote, that I have done my job here. And, you know, people will remember what I've taught them. You know, I've left my mark here, and I can do my job until I leave, and then I get to go home. Almost word for word what you just said. That's so bizarre.
Yeah, well, that kind of, you know, perception came to me about, I don't know, about 1992, 93. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, I'm going to do a job here. So once you realize, once you come from that perspective that it's a job, you don't need all the trappings that we're told we need for in life on Earth. For instance, you know, I do, for the last 25 years really, but absolutely for the last 5, 6, 7. I've absolutely done nothing except this work. And you know, people, like I said earlier, would say, you know, have you got nothing else in your life? But it's like, if you're at work doing a job, someone doesn't come up to you and say, in the period you're doing the job, why don't you do something else in this period? Well,
right.
'Cause I'm doing a job. Mm-hmm. And so I don't need all this other stuff that apparently goes with life, like relationships and socializing and
right,
sitting on beaches. I don't need it. I don't want it. It's a diversion to me. I'm not saying I'm not having to go anywhere that wants that. Great.
Right.
I'm saying that I don't see my life like that. My home is not here, and thus I'm doing a job, and then I'll go home, and that's how I see it. And when I'm, because I'm coming from that perspective, I have no resentment that I don't do all the other things that other people do, because I don't need to do them.
Right. I totally agree. It was like people saying to me, you've got bronchitis, you can barely breathe, and you still delivered the show yesterday. To me, that's a must. I mean, unless I had laryngitis and couldn't talk, then I have a problem.
But hey, I'd
probably type it out and send it out.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is a different way of looking at things, because, see, if we get caught, and lots of people who are in some way aware of the infinite nature of reality and life, they still get caught because the five senses still have that hold. And if we get caught in seeing the personality that is having the experience as who we are, then we start to pander to the needs of that personality or what society tells that personality its needs are. In a simple way, I'm sure a lot of women have had this over their lives. Where the parents say, or the mother says, you're in your 40s now, or your 30s now, shouldn't you be having a family? And all that stuff. Well, mother, if you want a family, you've got to have a family, mate. You know what I mean? So it's like, oh, you've got to have a family, and then you've got to do this, and then you've got to do that, and then, well, what happens then? Well, I die, don't I? And so it's from leaving the womb to arriving from home and leaving for home, if you like. There ain't just a blueprint that we have to stick to between those two points.
I agree.
That's what most people get caught in. Oh, well, you know, I better have a family, you know, again. Oh, you can't do that at your age. Oh, you what? Watch me. And so when you ditch all that, then you're not pressured into conforming with what life is supposed to be, because this isn't life, it's existence. Life is what exists beyond this world. We're trying to bring life into this world, because at the moment it's sheer existence, and even worse than existence for a lot of people now, it's agony.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I always refer to all of that as the bullshit of life. And that does take up a lot of time and energy and space, the human side of life and what people say you should have. You know, my teacher Sunbear used to say human beings need to stop shooting all over themselves.
Yeah, nice one.
And that was such a good one. David, earlier we were talking about Margaret Thatcher, and it tripped my triggers to actually a movie I saw about Margaret Thatcher a few months back. I think Meryl Streep played her.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're making all these history pieces, especially Abraham Lincoln. It's like they've dug him up from the grave and thrown him in our face over and over again. And I did, unfortunately, see the movie Lincoln. It was the most boring pack of lies I've ever seen. It makes you wonder, why is this just to continually pound into people's heads revisionist history?
Well, I think that's a lot of it. Yes, I mean, you know, Hollywood is the home of most people's perception of history, isn't it? Mm-hmm. People go to school, but they don't usually concentrate on history very much. I mean, I was very interested in history as a kid, one of the few things I was, really. But even then, it was the official version of history. It wasn't real history.
Wow.
But the Hollywood history is tremendously powerful in giving people perceptions. They're not interested where people get the truth. There's a lot they want them to get. They want them to have a perception that suits the agenda. Mm-hmm. For instance, one of the most powerful Hollywood impactors upon the American psyche is John Wayne.
Right.
And John, I've been to America so many times, Maria, and I've met John Wayne so many times. Mm. Unbelievable. He never died. He just multiplied. And I see him all the time, and it's the tough guy with a heart of gold who's just fighting for justice and right, and that's how they sell the American military. Mm-hmm. When they go off abroad and slaughter the innocent in stunning numbers. They're fighting for, it's John Wayne.
Right.
They're fighting for truth. They're tough. They have the best military in the world. They have the best technology in the world, because this is America. Mm-hmm. But if they're doing it with a heart of gold, they're just trying to help people when they drop bombs on their cities.
Right.
And John Wayne is a very, very powerful collective kind of archetype in not everybody in America, correctly, nothing like, but large numbers of people. And you see it a lot in Christian patriotism and stuff like that, although they're starting to get a bit more streetwise about what the wars are all about, and it's that's kind of diluting. But when you look at John Wayne, it's classic, because here is a war hero and a cowboy hero that never shot a gun in anger in his life. You know, when the people he portrayed in movies were getting shot in the D-Day landings and what have you, he was in makeup in Hollywood. So, you know, it's a fantasy. The Wayne thing is a fantasy. And there are so many other fantasies. I mean, we've just got this movie out about the heroic killing of Bin Laden, who wasn't even killed.
I
know. He died in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but again, this is the theme today, clearly. Perception manipulation. And
right, and
so
if you think about
it's
it,
just
look
about
at
getting people
right.
to believe it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, their perceptions will lead to other perceptions, will lead to actions,
right.
which are based on a lie, but it's a perception of a lie that they've taken as truth.
Absolutely, like all those Hollywood movies about 9/11 that were all full of crap.
You know, I could watch them, really, because, you know, I'd need a drink, really, to watch them, really, because it's so frustrating to watch and so pathetic. And Hollywood is, it's the creator of illusions. That's what it is. I mean, it comes from Hollywood, the holy wand of the druids. Hollywood. This is why you've got, you know, the things like Holyrood House in Scotland, the Queen's Palace in Scotland and stuff like that. It's all connected to the sacred holly of the druids. And it's about creating illusions, and that's what it does. And you know, I've traveled extensively around the world, but more than 50 countries, and everywhere you go, there's the Hollywood movies impacting on the perceptions of the people, no matter what language they speak and wherever they are in the world. Hollywood is a powerful mass, a global mind perception manipulator, essential to them in so many ways over so many years.
Right. Do you think that the majority of Hollywood is controlled by Zionists?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yes. If you look at the history, they created it from the start. They've not infiltrated it. They've created it. And then you look at who owns and runs the studios. And, you know, this is something, again, we may talk about this at length another time, but, you know, people are terrified to go here. So many people, the vast majority in the conspiracy research arena, will not go here. But I don't care. When you look at the fact that, well, let's look at Zionism. There is different types of Zionism. There's the Zionism which most Jewish people and many people who are not Jewish kind of support, and that is based on a homeland for Jewish people in what is Palestine, Israel, they call it now, and that's one level of it. But the core of the core of the core of Zionism, which I call Rothschild Zionism, is actually a secret society. And it was the secret society level of Rothschild Zionism coming out of Europe and Germany that actually created the public perception of Zionism and the overwhelming mass of the Jewish people's perception of Zionism, which is not what it's all about. Rothschild Zionism is a secret society, and Israel and all that stuff are being used as part of a global agenda. And You know, when you had 400,000 Jewish people on the streets of Israel in recent years, complaining and protesting about their economic plight, you can see that actually, you know, the vast sums that the American government gives to Israel every year does not go to them. Right. It goes to the elite in Israel, who are the Rothschild Zionists. So if you take the Jewish population of America, which is less than 2%, you then take out of that less than 2% those that are not Rothschild Zionists, which is the large majority. Where are you now in terms of a percentage? And then you look at where those Rothschild Zionists are. They control the government, they control the State Department, they control the Pentagon. They were absolutely in virtually every major position of influence and power before, during, and in the aftermath of 9/11. They control the banking system entirely. They control Hollywood and created it. They control the media apart from Hollywood. I mean, the percentage of Rothschild Zionist places of people in power. Look at the Supreme Court.
Right.
Nearly half are Rothschild Zionists. Right. In a country of 300 million with multiple racial groups, are you having a laugh?
Right.
This is what people need to face.
Right.
And I will not shut up about it,
and
I don't care what is thrown at me. I will not. I'll just shout louder because it's a key thing to understand.
Absolutely.
You look at New Zealand. Jewish people in New Zealand are 0.17 of the population, but the Prime Minister's a Rothschild Zionist. This is what you find in place after place after place, because they manipulate. In Britain, David Cameron, Prime Minister, Rothschild Zionist. Leader of the opposition, a guy called Ed Miliband, Rothschild Zionist. It's ridiculous. We've got 286,000 Jewish people, not Rothschild Zionists, far, far smaller. 286,000 Jewish people in a country of 60 million. What? And they lead both the major political parties. This is ridiculous level of coincidence. But it's not coincidence, because you look everywhere else. You look in Canada, you find the same thing.
Carefully put in place. David, you and I are going to have to do a show just on this. Maybe that's what we'll do next month. Because, you know, I've never had a problem talking about them either. And I kind of question people that do. David, thanks so much for joining me today. It was really great.
Pleasure, Maria. See you next week. Okay. Oh, no, next month, sorry.
Next month, thanks.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
David Icke, Conversations with David. We get going. I guess we get a little hot there, a little hot. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed today's show. Tomorrow, I'm sure, will be just as powerful when Blood and Guts returns with my co-host, Jack Blood. Thanks again for supporting the show, and I'll see you guys tomorrow.
Thank you for listening and supporting the Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.